Good afternoon and welcome to this lovely panel. It is Fantasy in New Worlds. I'm very excited to be discussing these books with these wonderful authors. And so I'm going to start really quickly with an introduction. We have Cameron Chittick. He's a writer from Northeast Ohio. Cameron's writing is possible thanks to patient teachers, encouraging friends, and a supportive family. He previously edited comics, including titles such as Met Cadet U, the Eisner Award-nominated graphic novel New World, and Jim Hansen's The Power of the Dark Crystal. He now lives in New England and works in education. We also have Sayantani Dasgupta, is the New York Times best-selling author of the critically acclaimed Bengali folktale and string theory-inspired Karanmala in the Kingdom Beyond books. Kiranmala. Yeah. I don't think I said that right, and I was working on it all day.
That's all right, that's all right.
The first of which, The Serpent's Secret, was a Bank Street's best book of the year, a book list best middle grade novel of the 21st century, and an E.B. White Read Aloud honor book. She's also the author of Debating Darcy and Rosewood, Contemporary Young Adult Reimaginings of Jane Austen's Novels. Sayantani is a pediatrician by training, but now teaches at Columbia University and is a team member of We Need Diverse Books. And then we have Izzy Hendricks, is a Nigerian-American children's author who has been lucky enough to live and work all over the world, from the Himalayas to the Amazon rainforest, during her past life as an anthropologist.
Ooh.
Now she's based in her hometown of Brooklyn, New York, where she lives with a rotating roster of foster kittens and a stubborn refusal to accept that she's highly allergic to cats.
Oh, no!
My blood is antihistamines.
Yes. Finger pain. I love cats, too. Adia Kilbara in the Circle of Shamans is Izzy's debut middle grade novel.
Yay!
Very exciting. And I'm Nicole Montgomery. I believe in the program. It says I'm a children's librarian. I am not a librarian. I'm an educator. So I taught middle and high school, and I also teach children's literature at Simmons University. Hello,
yay.
Simmons. All right now. Right, there we go. A teacher educator at Boston College. And so let's get started with our program because that's what we're here for. And so if you each can just give us a brief synopsis of your book so we know what they're about.
You want me to start? Oh,
go for it.
All right. The problem is sitting at the end. This is working, right? Y'all can hear me. I have a really loud voice regardless. So this is The Secrets of the Sky is the third series set in the Kiranmala and the Kingdom Beyond multiverse. So we have the Kiranmala initial trilogy. We have a Demon Queen duology. And now we have this about to be trilogy. The Poison Waves, which I'm here to talk to you about, is the second book in this new series, which involves some old friends from my other books, but two new protagonists, Gia and Kinjal Rajkumar, who are brother-sister 10-year-old twins, who think they are just ordinary kids living in an ordinary town on an ordinary street, live in ordinary lives, but they live in New Jersey. And I don't know. I don't know if all y'all know anything about New Jersey. But there's nothing ordinary about New Jersey. If there is a portal to a different dimension, it is definitely in New Jersey. And so they discover that, in fact, their father has a magical book, which opens a portal to this other dimension. It invokes these flying horses to show up. And thumbs up, their flying horse dog is in some peril in the beginning of the first book, and they have to go off and save Thumbs Up and figure out what their horsey friends want. It's an eco fantasy series, so in the first book, what the horses want is they want their help figuring out why the bees, the magical bees, are missing in their kingdom, because everything is connected to everything. And if the bees are missing, the plants will die and the animals will die, etc. And in the second book, the mermaids, the Bengali mermaids who have wings and fins, because we're extra cool, are getting sick. And they have to figure out what's going on, why the waves themselves are poisonous. So that's this series.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, sounds great. Okay, I'll grab mine. Pass mine over. Thank you.
Ooh, hold on.
Oh, it's okay.
Blind bookmark.
No worries. So this is Adia Kelbra and the Circle of Shamans. It's my debut novel. It just came out a few weeks ago, actually.
Yay.
And it's, oh, thank you, everyone. So kind. So it's set in an African-inspired fantasy world, inspired a lot by my heritage. I'm from the Igbo tribe of Nigeria. And it's about 12-year-old Adia, who is convinced she's possessed by a demon. In my tribe, it's a specific demon called an Obanji. And those children, this is a real thing, those children are declared to be bringers of misfortune. And it's pretty rough what happens to them. So this happens to Adia, and she runs away from home to find a shaman who can exorcise her. And instead, she discovers a shocking secret that she's either going to bring about her world salvation or destruction. And along the way, we'll meet African gods, demons, and headless girls who can braid their own hair. Which is a skill I always wish I had. So I threw that in there. So that's Adia. You can read it later if you want to. Yes. Thank you.
So Mapmakers and the Enchanted Mountain. Cool. Thank you. This is the second book in the Mapmaker series, which I write, and Amanda Castillo is the illustrator. It's a three-book series. So the first one is Mapmakers and the Lost Magic. This is the second one. And then next spring, we'll have the final volume. And the Mapmaker series is about a young girl, Alladade, who discovers this magical map of her hometown. And it brings to life this great blue heron who's like the embodiment of her hometown. And so she and her best friend, Lewis, kind of go on an adventure to free their hometown from the Nightcoats, who are kind of the not-so-great people in charge. So the first book is very much about Lewis and Alladade learning about their hometown, where they come from. And then the second book is about them actually going off and discovering a new place. They discover this mountain, which is supposedly been abandoned, and there's no one there, and it's just nature. And then they get there, and they find this like entire culture and community living in the mountain. So it's the second book of the series.
Yay.
And so my very first question with that is, why write for middle school? What is it about middle schoolers that you decided to write these books for them?
You want to start in the middle?
Yeah.
I'll start.
Go for it.
I've always been a massive reader, but that age, like 8 to 13, is when people think I'm lying, but I would read like 7 to 8 books a week. Like, it was all I did. The only time I got in trouble in school was because I was reading under my desk, so maybe some other people can relate to that. So it was just such an important age for me, and books, people say books save lives. I'm like, they really did save my life. I was growing up in such a difficult situation, and my third grade teacher in particular, you're a teacher, so I hope you appreciate this, but I was very quiet, but she could tell something was wrong, and she would just always, hand me a book at the end of class, and I'd just read it in a night and give it back to her, and she'd give me another book. And those books just gave me so much hope and just so much strength, that I didn't even realize. But now I look back and I'm like, wow, that really changed everything and just opened up worlds for me. I grew up in a terrible neighborhood, and just that age and what those books did for me, I want to be able to do that for other kids, especially ones who are in difficult situations like I was in.
Yeah, I think that passing forward, I think, is a big part of it for me as well. That age, I think, in particular, is when you first start, at least for me, it was when I first started finding books on my own, and that sense of discovery and that sense of this is I'm engaging with this on my own. And I do think there's something about that age too, where the things that you read or watch or they have an exponentially larger impact. At least for me, those are the stories that got me to care about story, that I think even just flipping through them, reading passages or looking at the, if it's a comic, looking at the images, there's just a level of excitement and of engaging with stories at that age that I think is really special. And I know they were, the books that I read at that time were huge, made a huge impact on me, and wanting to kind of be able to do that for other readers. That's definitely the motivation for sure.
Yeah, to echo everything y'all said, I think that readers in this age group are incredible because they have such a, if you want somebody with a real sense of justice and a real sense of right and wrong in the world, approach a middle grade reader, right? Because they have a really clear sense of well, that's not right. Why is that happening? And that's not, we should fix that. And so I, to keep that alive in myself, I feel like, as an author, it's so lucky that to be in dialogue with people that age, you get to keep that sense of kind of joy and justice alive in your own heart. And honestly, when I was that age, I was a huge bookworm, as I'm, hearing that y'all were too. But I never got to see myself in any books. And so at some level, it convinced me that maybe, you know, somebody like me couldn't be a hero, even of my own life. And that's a kind of a terrible thought, and I don't want any of the young people in this room to ever have that thought. But I was carrying it around with me for so long that then when the opportunity came to write for this age group, I was writing for my readers, but I was also writing for like 12-year-old me, right, who hadn't had that. And that idea that, you know, we are all heroes and we're going to need all of our heroism to solve, right, all the issues going on in the world. And so I was writing for myself as well as this amazing age group.
Thank you. And so now what I'm going to think about is why fantasy as your genre? Like, why did you choose to write in fantasy? And then for Cameron, I also want you to think about why the graphic novel? So the fantasy and the graphic novel.
Well, I think for me, those kind of go hand in hand in that, like, I was a big reader in general, but comics, for whatever reason, that combination of art and words just absolutely struck me like a bolt of lightning when I was a kid. Whether it was Calvin and Hobbes, or I found in my grandparents' attic, like, this old box of my dad's comics from when he was a kid, and every time we went over there, I would just go up and reread and reread. So there's something about that medium that just has always spoken to me, and as a writer, like, even when I first started writing, I actually started writing comic scripts, and I would, because the back of the book of some of the books I had, you know, example scripts. So I just copy that format, and I'd write a script, and I can't draw at all, so I'd take it, I'm like, great, I did it, and then just no one would draw it. It would just sit there. So to get to actually, I think that was the other thing of, like, not having any art, or not feeling confident in my artistic talents, we'll put it that way. There's always been something about what someone can do with just ink on a page that just blows my mind. And so that collaboration of getting to come up with ideas and see someone else then take it and run with it in their own way and bring their own vision to it was really, was just always kind of what I wanted to do. And then with the fantasy, it's interesting because as much as, like, I loved fantasy stories growing up, and I loved comics growing up, but there at that time, and there's way more now, but that time as a kid, like, if you wanted to read a fantasy graphic novel for kids, it just wasn't a thing. And at least not one that was readily accessible to me. So, again, kind of like writing for that idea of writing for yourself, wanting to write a story that was, you know, a fantasy story, that was a comic. And then also, you know, try and, how do I, you know, do the fantasy story that has themes and characters and ideas that I wish, you know, 8 to 12-year-old Cameron had access to, was you know, definitely kind of part of the goal when we set out with Map Makers, for sure.
So I feel like in fantasy, we can imagine forward the worlds we want to create. Right? We can imagine forward the kind of a world where we're all welcomed and all celebrated. And as a child, I was a huge science fiction and fantasy lover. And so I don't think there was a lot of room for, like, brown girls who loved Star Wars and Star Trek and Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And, like, that was me. It was me. And I was just talking to Nicole before the panel about this. I was realizing that a lot, not all, but a lot of the fantasy that I was consuming was kind of rewriting ideas of colonialism, right? No man has gone before, right? Or like, ta-da, right, whatever it is. Nobody sue me. So, William Shatner, don't come be mad at me. And even though that show, for instance, did a lot of really interesting stuff around race, around who gets to be in the community, there was still this kind of settler colonialist, like, we're going to go conquer worlds, feeling about it or idea about it. And so as I grew up, I realized, well, I want to write fantasy that does something different. Like, I don't want to write about going and conquering the people who are backward and taking their... Like, I don't want to do that. What about a different kind of fantasy? What about a different kind of a space where, you know, or a different kind of a narrative where fantasy, again, creates the world that supports us all? And so that's, I mean, I'm still kind of a fantasy dork. I don't love it. But I just want to expand what we mean when we say fantasy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, very similar. I grew up like just a massive fantasy dork, like Lord of the Rings girl. Yeah.
Still, to this day.
I can recite it and people are horrified to watching that movie with me. I will recite it and they're like, oh no. I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right? Aragorn. Like the.
He's the perfect human being. Yeah. But yeah, so a massive Lord of the Rings girl. But then I read all these books and this is all I read till I was maybe 20. And yeah, just. All white characters, so I'm not in any of these books that I love and that I read like repeatedly, like A Wrinkle in Time, His Dark Materials. Like I loved all those books, but yeah, but I don't exist in any of them. So it was really important to me to write a book where like a black girl's on the cover because, you know, there's I feel bad saying it. There's some great books, but it's like so many black books now, like young adult books, are like focused on like black pain. So it's like The Hate U Give or like. The winner of the Newbery last year, I think it was the second time in like 100 years a black woman has won that award, but you know, it's about slave children. So I'm like, okay, that's important, that needs to exist, they should be recognized, but that can't be all there is. So I'm like, okay, there also has to be black children like having adventures and being the heroes and slaying dragons. So I just, you know, really wanted to balance that out. And also exactly what you were saying about the, like the colonization, it's like, that was a lot of what the fantasy books were back in the day. Like, we're going to conquer a world. I'm like, what about the people who have been conquered? And so my book is actually set in the aftermath of religious colonization. So basically the West came into Adia's village and you're like, everything you're doing is evil. Like, this is how you have to be, which is something also that happened to my tribe in, you know, Africa. So I wanted to bring in this perspective. Like, this is the aftermath of what you've done when you've told an indigenous group of people that their way is wrong and the destruction that that causes in a different way that maybe people don't think about now because it's still going on. My tribe was only freed from, like, British colonization in the 60s, so it's, like, very recent. Like, my mom grew up under British rule. So, yeah, I wanted to, like, just put this and fantasy because it's easier to explain, like, these big concepts in, like, a fantasy world, especially to kids. It's, like, there are layers to it, but you can also just read it and just think it's a fun adventure, but then you can also go back and, like, oh, like, that's a lot of the books I read as a kid. I read them now as an adult. I'm like, whoa, that's deep, but I didn't even process everything I was reading back then. So, yeah, I love fantasy. I think you could do so much with it.
Well, and there is that, like, that ability to have escapism into this other world, but still then come out of it learning something more about your own world.
Exactly.
I think part of it, like as a Tolkien person, I associate fantasy with like nature. So even though like I can be sitting indoors very much in the comfort of my home reading a fantasy book, like I can, it makes me feel more connected to the natural world or the world around us, even though I'm, you know, trying to go to a different place and get that escapism. So I think being able to do both in the genre is mm-hmm. one of its strengths for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so, and you started to talk about this a little bit, but can you talk about some of the historical, the cultural, and the realistic elements that are present in your work, right? So even though it is fantasy, there are those pieces, and then you started to talk about it, but could you mm-hmm. say a little bit more?
So my first series, the Kirin Mala and the Kingdom Beyond series, the first book was called The Serpent's Secret, and it was about a 12-year-old immigrant daughter growing up in New Jersey, because again, everything strange happens in New Jersey, who has to go off and kind of discover her origins. She realizes she's really from this alternate universe. And it's only in discovering her true story, all the aspects of it, the good and the bad, that she's able to kind of claim her superpowers, right? And so it really is an immigrant daughter's identity journey. And it's the reason I use kind of sci-fi is that it's this idea that, you know, immigrant families are galaxy hoppers, right? We get to live in multiple dimensions at the same time. My second series is really deeply, the Fire Queen middle grade series is really deeply influenced by the Indian Revolution against the British. It's a direct metaphor for it. The very like thinly disguised British are the Serpent Empire that, you know, our heroes have to fight against. And then this series is the kind of real life issues that kind of come to the fore in this series are, it's an eco-fantasy series, so really are environmental themes. So, you know, why are the waters being poisoned? Because there's these particular magical factories that are being built, but there's also like acid rain from this demon who's crying happening. And even though it's in a fantastical context, my idea was, how can we talk about climate change and the environment in a way that doesn't feel overwhelming, inuring, like, oh, I've heard about that too much, like enough already, or like kind of paralyzing, like, oh, what can I do about it anyway? It's such a big problem. I wanted to write about this real world problem in a fantastical world so that kids would feel excited and energized. And if you read it for the fun adventure and the ridiculous riddles and the siblings who are fighting constantly, great. But if you read it for the environmental themes, also great. So those are the kind of the nice. The big issues that I fold into ridiculous humor in my and fantasy.
Yeah, well, I touched about, you know, my tribe and like that it's about colonization, religious colonization. But also on a personal note, the demon that my main character is accused of being is an Obanji. I wasn't accused of being that, but I would have been if my mother hadn't like protected me. Most of those kids are sick, and I did have a brain tumor as a child and like debilitating seizures.
Wow.
I'm okay now, though. I'm clear. Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, I put that in there because it's really brutal what happens to these kids, and I don't think anyone knows about what this is, you know, outside of in my little tribe. So yeah, I wanted to touch on that, give a little context to it, some history about that. And then on a like lighter note, I'm an anthropologist, as you said. I don't know if anyone knows what an anthropologist is. Any kids? Yeah, I'm sure some of the adults do. It basically translates as the study of humanity, which is like a massive thing. But my focus was cultural anthropology, which is studying other societies, and biological, which is studying primatology. And so I, you know, I didn't write specifically about things I experienced, but then I can put like something fun in there. Like I have a scene where there's like a snake river, and my editor's like, oh, this is horrifying. I'm like, oh yeah, it's about this time really when I tripped over a bushmaster. It's like a 12-foot-long venomous python, and it's just like, ugh. So I can put a lot of like stories from just my travels in the jungle into my book. So that's a lot of fun to write too. So it's like serious stuff, but then I also try to throw in some fun reality things, but also kind of educational. Just you can be an anthropologist with me for 300 pages.
One of the for map makers, one of the great things about working with an artist is you get to, like I said, you get to kind of see someone else really bring something to an idea you had. And Amanda and I, luckily, like we're able to talk a lot, Zoom a lot, text a lot. We're able to really kind of make it collaborative. And so, you know, when we were kind of building out the world, we knew we wanted it to be kind of pre-industrial. Like we didn't want trains and cars and things like that, but we didn't want it to be fully like medieval either. But that was really like, that was kind of it. And I knew, I knew like for the character designs, for example, like I knew I wanted Alade to have a hat and Lewis to have glasses, just so like if I'm structuring the panels, they've got something to do. We've got, you know, things to kind of play with. But, after that, it was really more about like, okay, what's the dynamic of this, of their town where it's from? What's the personality of the place? What are the personalities of the characters? And when they go to the mountain in book two, like what is the, you know, I knew that we wanted it to be a people who are really plugged into stories and using art to tell stories. And so that's kind of like where the conversation gets left off. And then Amanda comes back with, you know, a bunch of different options for character designs and sketches for the different locations. And that's where like Amanda brings so much of their background. And like, for example, the setting in the mountains, the patterns that the people wear and the sort of just the colors and a lot of the way that's all built is all based on a community in the Philippines. And as a writer, again, it's like, it's why I love comics so much. Like that's something I would have never touched on. I would have never had that cultural, you know, reference point. But it's Amanda getting to show their voice and their ideas. And so what you're seeing on the finished page, like it is, I mean, I always say like comics is an artist medium. So like, you know, if it takes me 3 months, 4 months to write the script, it takes Amanda a year to draw it. Like it's an artist medium. But what you're seeing is the end result for both of us, which is really cool. And then I think, you know, thematically, I think there, you know, in terms of touching on real stuff, there's definitely a lot of environmental, you know, definitely exploring a lot of environmental stuff and how we can, you know, the harmony between, between civilization and nature. But we really kind of kept coming back to this idea of, okay, if I, you know, the core idea for Alade and her journey as a hero, because I grew up huge Star Wars fan, huge Lord of the Rings fan. And as much as I still love those things way more than it's probably healthy, you know, I kind of, as like a writing challenge myself, wanted, okay, if I could, I want to tell a story that hits on those hero's journey beats that kind of is very much, you know, I don't want to like shy away from the fact that I love those stories and that they mean a lot to me, but I want to kind of see if there's a way to do it and have it feel like those stories felt, but instead of our main character being, you know, running around with a sword or a lightsaber, or, you know, and having the final conflict kind of always end up in a big explosion, like, can our main character's purpose and sort of the best quality of her be, I want to understand how this works. I want to understand the world around me better. I want to learn why these things are the way they are. Which is another thing I think for, you know, it's so fun about writing for kids. Like, they want to know things. They're so curious. And that sense of justice comes through, I think, in the, like, you see that sense of justice come out because they're looking at something going, this doesn't work. Why is this way? And you're like, oh, that's the way it is. And it's like, no, that doesn't make sense. So that was kind of a guiding light for us as well.
Thank you. And so, question here, how would your middle school self feel about seeing you here today?
Oh. Very proud. Very proud. Yeah. Yeah.
I was really shy, so I don't think she'd believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she'd be like, what?
You come across as very shy.
Yeah. Have you lost your mind?
Yeah. And I don't know how you guys got into like, I just started writing during the pandemic. Like, I never thought that I could actually write a book. And then I was like, well, you have nothing to do. Like, let's try that book you always said you'd write. And I'm like, oh, this, it was such a full circle moment. It's like, you were supposed to always be doing this. You just got distracted. But yeah, like, as a, I don't know if any of you kids like to write, just like write. It's so fun. Just write for fun. And
if you write, you're a writer.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? If you write, you're a writer. If you love words, you're a writer.
If you love books, like, try writing if you haven't tried yet. Because I waited too long to try. And I read so many books, but they were like these magical things that other people did. It's like, I didn't wrap my head around that. Like, you can do that too. Like, of course you can. So, yeah.
But there's no too long.
Yeah, I know. Right? That's true.
So you grown up, you're writers too, right?
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Do y'all have questions?
I'm going to open it up to you all, and we ask that the young people go first. Yep.
What inspired you to make your book?
Yeah, it's a great question. So here, can I tell you about one inspiration that I didn't talk about? So I have a dog. Anybody here, any of the young people here have a pet, a cat or a dog? So do you think, just think about in your head, like, if they were in a situation where they had to be brave, would they be? So I have a dog who's very big and he looks like he should be really brave, and he's not. He's afraid of ladybugs. He's 80 pounds, which is like a big dog. He's afraid of ladybugs. Ladybugs are very scary. Flies are very scary, to the extent, like, he'll put his face in the corner, he'll be really scared. So I tried to think about a dog who is a family dog, but is actually, but my dog is also magical, right? Y'all with pets know. Your pets are magical, right? And so I thought about one of the things that inspired me to write this series was my dog, because I thought about I don't know if you can see, right? She's on the cover there. And she's on, thumbs up, that's right, she's on the cover here. So I thought about a family dog who's not just a family dog, who's actually a tiny flying horse, and who's kind of like failed out of flying horse school, so she ends up having to, not very good at flying and stuff, and like maybe afraid of ladybugs, but then becomes a protector of a brother and sister and does a really good job at that. And so when they go off on their adventures, thumbs up may not be great at flying, but thumbs up is really, really good at loving this brother and sister. And so that was my inspiration.
Mm-hmm. For me, I'd say there's two pieces of it. One is, since I do read a lot of fantasy books, you know, every fantasy book has like the big map in the beginning of the book. It's always super intricate, and I always kind of get lost in them before starting to read. So the first was just, I love these fantasy maps. What if they were magic? What would that look like? How would that work?
Nice.
And then the other part of it though is I'm from Ohio, and I'm I don't. If you ever meet someone from Ohio, we love being from Ohio. Are you really?
I am.
Awesome. All right, so now we have this bond. So I was very proud of where I come from. I love my home. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time. So I was living on literally the opposite side of the country. And I kind of had a sense that if we did ever leave LA, my wife and I, we'd end up coming here where she's from. So I kind of had this sense that I wasn't going to end up going back there and living back there. And so this story, Alde and Lewis's story, is very much about me writing about home, about being homesick and loving where I come from and being very proud of where I come from, but also loving adventure and wanting to go out and see the world and try new things and see all sorts of different places. And when I realized that maps naturally are a way to kind of write about a place, that's where I kind of really started to get like the heart of the story and kind of was moving downhill from there. So that was the inspiration for me.
And I actually didn't start the book off with any inspiration or idea. So I've discovered now I'm something called a pantser, which is like you just write by the seat of your pants and you have no idea what you're doing. So it's really fun. It's very chaotic. But I encourage you all, if you don't have any idea, just sit down and just start typing nonsense. And if you do that long enough, eventually you'll get a first draft, which is what I did. And then I have to go back and reread it and like make an outline. But I didn't start with any plan. And it's amazing that you can start with no idea and end up with a book in the end. It's fascinating.
That
it's like magic.
That is like a superpower.
It's magic.
I cannot process that.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
So just, if you don't have any ideas, just try that. Just sit in front of your computer for like 30 minutes. Something will happen. It's fascinating.
Or do it my way, which is spend an extremely long time making an outline, getting meticulous, 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 and then starting writing and realizing, oh my God, this outline's terrible. I have to just create it as I go along. That's
more
my
approach. They're both processes.
Yes,
they're
both processes.
Can be painful, yeah, but...
Oh.
Oh, fantasy. Okay, that gets more specific.
Oh, yes. So the question was, what is your favorite fantasy book, like contemporary fantasy book, middle grades?
I'll give you two comics that I love that are middle grade fantasy. One is Amulet, which is really great. Last book comes out next year. I'm both very excited and kind of sad that it's over, but... That series is incredible. Kazu's amazing. And then the other one is called Mouse Guard, and that's another fantasy graphic novel series by David Peterson. And I've gotten to know David over the years. And that's one, like, I love the story, I love the characters, but his art, and particularly just the way he does, you know, it's a kind of the characters are mice, but it's a medieval fantasy kind of setting, and just the detail is just incredible. I can get lost looking in those pages. So those would be my Rex, if you haven't read those.
So my favorite, it might be more sci-fi speculative. I'll say it's speculative. It's When You Reach Me by Rebecca Stead.
Yeah.
That is a gorgeous book. It's actually a retelling of A Wrinkle in Time, which is one of my favorite books. And I refused to read this book for years because I'm like, nothing can top it. And honestly, I think I might like it more than A Wrinkle in Time.
Wow.
If you haven't read it, it's extraordinary. Like, wow, I haven't felt like that way about a book in so long. It was really cool. Really unique.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation. Wrinkle in Time is always my, like, not from, like, when I was younger recommendation for one of the fantasy books I loved. And I would say, ooh, if you haven't read Amari and the Night Brother.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't
that's
that
a great
good?
One. Yeah.
Isn't it deep?
Yeah. Oh, he blurbed me. B.B. Elson blurbed my book.
There you go.
Yeah.
Such a good. I love magical school. I want to go to magical school. I love magical school.
Nice. Yeah. Yay.
Do you write stories now?
Do you know Wings of Fire?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tui Sutherland's books, they're great.
And Spirit Animals.
Nice. Also a great series.
Nice.
So those are some of your favorites, huh?
Nice.
Do you write stories yourself now? Like dragon stories or animal stories, like those books? Yeah.
You make up stories in your head?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that a lot, too.
Yeah, you absolutely should. You don't have to wait till you're a grown-up is kind of my point.
Make them up
That's
in your
awesome.
Head.
Keep carry going.
Yay. Carry a recorder. That way you can record yourself doing the stories.
Oh, yeah.
As they're coming in your head. So we have a writer here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Here.
Oh, that's such a good question.
Wait, can you say it a little louder? I didn't hear. Okay.
I totally do. I'm very visual when I write. So sometimes even if I'm not writing in order, I'll write scenes, but I'll write the scene that like I can see in my head most clearly. Almost like a little movie playing in my head, and I'm trying desperately to like make my words match the picture in my head. So that is actually the way I write. I know it's not the way everyone writes, but that is actually part of the way I write.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I don't see it in my head because I don't know what I'm doing. So I don't see anything. Cause, yeah.
I have to, because I have to, for writing the script for a comic page, you have to, on each page, you know, plan out what each panel is going to be. And the trick is you kind of, again, I always think it's like an artist medium. And so you have to give enough structure that the artist knows what the goal of the page is and that the artist knows in each panel, like what's the most important thing happening in this panel. But at the same time, you have to give them enough freedom that they know like they can bring their ideas to it and their take on the moment and the characters in the page. So I really have to kind of think, because it's easy to just be like, all right, well, this page is going to have 10 things of action and 20 balloons of dialogue and also a really big image somehow. And then there's no way to fit all that in. So you have to kind of really think about, all right, what's this page going to look like? What are these panels going to look like? So you stress about it a lot, and then Amanda comes up with something way better than what you had in mind. So it's good.
I love that. Even the illustrate, like, you know, I don't write graphics, but the illustrators, mm-hmm. Like, I'll see an illustration, and I'll laugh, and I'm like, well, I wrote that character, but the illustrators bring them to life, and so then you yourself are like, this is hilarious. Who wrote this? And you're like, oh, write me.
I think querying an agent for me was like the most terrifying part. And I even came, I did a mentorship program, which is really great too. If you, any of you kids look into like getting a writing mentor or like a mentorship program. So I did that. So I even had support and I was still terrified to like, cause it's my first book. I didn't know if like, is this any good? So like getting over that, it's just, you kind of just have to do it. It's one of the main steps if you want to do traditionally published books. Like if you self-publish, that's a different story, but you need an agent if you want to do traditionally published books. So yeah, it was just kind of like the way you get through anything that's terrifying, you just have to do it, I guess. Yeah.
For me, I think it's there's like a whiplash as a writer, at least for me as a writer, where like you have part of you has this incredible confidence of like, I think that the words I write down, someone should take their time to read them. Like that, you have to have a little bit of sort of delusional, a little bit of delusion to write that. But at the same time, you're at least for me, you also have to have enough self-doubt that you're willing to go in and edit and keep trying to get it better. So it's the kind of going back and forth of like, I just wrote the greatest thing that everyone's ever written. Everyone's gonna be so lucky to read this. And like, this is the worst thing that's ever written. I shouldn't leave my house for weeks. I should be so embarrassed. So it's kind of like, it's going back and forth. Like you kind of, and sometimes you're feeling really bad about your work and you have to kind of give yourself a pep talk. And other times it's, you know, you're like, no, you need to go back. That draft is not perfect. Go back and really get in there. I always tell the story of, there was one, when I wrote the first book, we had a very flexible schedule. We didn't have any kids at the time. And so I would like have these luxurious Saturday and Sundays where I would sit and just write as much as I wanted. And then we had our firstborn like literally the weekend the pandemic hit in 2020. And it was like, oh, I have 10 minutes. I'm going to write 6 words. And they're gonna be great. And there was one day where I was like really struggling with the draft for this book. And I told my wife, I was like, listen, I just need a day. If you give me one day, I've been stuck. I'll break through. I'll get like a ton of pages done. And then I'll be good to go. And so she took our daughter to the in-laws, and I had the whole day to write. And I wrote page 48, panel 1, change of scene.
Oh, no.
All day?
That's what I got. And I write by hand my first draft, so the page is like basically falling apart for how many times I'd started, erased, went and took a walk, like just fell by walking into the ocean, never coming back. Like, it was... It was rough. But then, you know, then you have days when you it just kind of comes naturally. So I think for me, like, the biggest fear is always just, it's just kind of like you're perpetually have a little bit of fear that what you're doing isn't maybe up to where you'd want it to be. But yeah. That's part of the process, too.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, for me, the answer is community. So I see an author friend of mine sitting right there who, you know, along with other author friends of mine have dragged me from the abyss of despair many a time. This is my 10th book. The fear never goes away. Or my 10th children's book. Like, I have other books also. 10th children's book. The fear never goes away. The fear of like the mismatch between what I see in my head and what's on the page, the fear of like not being able to communicate what's in my heart to my readers, the fear of like a lack of support. Publishing is like a difficult industry, right? Things go up and down. Community. Like I would just be sitting in my house, like feeling sorry for myself a lot. Yeah. If it wasn't for these really smart fellow authors who were like, get your act together, honey, do the thing, you know? Not always that exact statement, but essentially, right? So I think being in community with others who believe in you is the way through almost any difficulty.
And I think that's actually really good advice for, like, if you're starting out writing or you're just, like, writing for fun, is, like, find someone.
Yeah.
Either people who also like writing or people who just are friends that are willing to read your stuff and get excited and give feedback. Like, I think... Yeah, I mean the
and kick you in the pants.
Exactly. Yes, and kick you in the pants. I really do think that's like the most. That is absolutely the and there's no reason to like wait to get that part of it because it's part of the fun. I mean, it's like, I think even if we didn't write, like just hearing us talk about those, you know, Star Wars and all these things that we love, like you have this sort of excitement in you to talk about story, to talk about characters, and I think it can sometimes also be intimidating to like find other people to share that with, but. It really does make the whole, as much as the like isolated writer is a very sort of iconic trope, like the writer with a community is a way, way more fulfilling place to be.
Thank you so much. Can we give these authors a round of applause?
Audience. And our moderator.
Yes, thank you.
And so these wonderful books are for sale. Our authors will be out front signing books for you. So please, 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 please pick these up. We need you to read them. Thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Have a great rest
of
your day.
Thank you so much, everybody. Bye.